Hey, y'all, and welcome to this week's From the Vault episode from the Magdalene House podcast. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization based in Dallas, Texas, and known affectionately by many as Maggie's. Every first and third Wednesday, we bring you a new release. And our From the Vault episodes, we share podcast releases from our three different podcast series, Recover Ed, Recovered, Interviews with Alcoholics, and Hope for the Family. Our podcasts aim to connect, inspire, and educate alcoholics, loved ones, and the community to the Magdalene House and the services we offer. We are so glad that you're here. Thanks for listening.
Hello, podcast listeners. My name is Stephanie Crawford, and I am the host of this podcast. And today we're doing a special edition of Recovered Interviews with Alcoholic Women. So instead of interviewing one woman, we're interviewing two very special women. Both of these women did go through the Magdalene House through our first step, formerly known as Social Detox Program, and got heavily involved when they left and really active in a group that we have here called the Maggie's Women's Group and what they've done with that. And it's just going to be great. And I know that you all love them as much as everybody else who meets them. So today we have on JoJo and Sandra. JoJo, if you could introduce yourself and give your name and sobriety date and just a little bit of background of what your alcoholism looked like before you came to Maggie's. And then we'll ask Sandra the same thing.
Thank you, Stephanie. My name is JoJo. I am a grateful recovered alcoholic. I am powerless against alcohol. And my sobriety date is December 5th of 2019. I'm a one-time Maggie's girl. I'm very honored to be doing this with my outlaw. Yes, we are related by marriage. Our children are married. So in the beginning, I got sober when I was 68. I just turned 70 last year. I was broken. I'm from a broken family. My spirit was broken. Everything about me was broken. My history of, I was brought up in an alcoholic home. All my relatives, I believe, were alcoholics. Of course, no one ever talked about it. This was in the 50s. No one ever talked about it. We just gathered at relatives' houses and everybody drank beer or hard liquor. I don't think anybody drank wine back then. At least my relatives didn't, vodka and beer. So I was surrounded by that at an early age, although my drinking didn't actually start until I was a grown woman. You know, I drank in high school, as everyone probably did, but I didn't drink alcoholically until after my children were born and grown, was when I really became concerned about the amount of alcohol that I was drinking. So let me go back a little bit to my family history. I was sexually abused when I was a young child, around 8 or 9 years old, by a family member. My dad abandoned my mother and my brother and sister and I when I was 16. He left. No one knew where he went. He looked like he was going fishing that day. He was a big fly fisherman, but then we never saw him again. So growing up in my 20s, I always felt that I was a victim, that I was a sad little girl. I'd been hurt by my dad, not sexually, but emotionally. He left. I loved him dearly, and the sexual abuse that I suffered, I didn't actually think about or admit to until I was in therapy in my late 20s. And then it all came kind of up, you know, just kind of appeared. And I had memories of it where I had blocked it out before. So anyway, so having lived with this, I married, I had two children, had a great life, raised my children, got them off to college, and they left home, obviously. And then I was empty nesting with my husband. And that's when I could really see where my drinking increased, it was progressing. I knew about alcoholism. I knew it was a disease, but I didn't know until I went to Maggie's that it was an allergy, that the body and the mind worked together, and that it was progressed so in my life that I became aware of it, but not so aware that I wanted to stop. I just continued to drink. I enjoyed drinking. I never really had a hangover, and this was interesting. I never really had a hangover, even though I drank all day. I never really had that headache and awful feeling. And someone told me one time after I'd gotten sober that I didn't get a hangover because alcohol was never out of my body, that it was continually in my bloodstream. So what happened was I just I did all the alcoholic things. I went to the store on Saturday night so that I would have plenty to drink in the morning on Sunday, because you couldn't buy alcohol till noon. I didn't want to have to go back to the store. And I would hide the empty bottles in my car so my husband wouldn't see them. And just all these dishonest, and I felt terrible about myself. I had very low self-esteem, but I saw that I was isolating, and, you know, I was canceling appointments with the doctors. I was canceling appointments with my friends. I was canceling lunch dates because I wanted to stay home and drink by myself. My husband was at work. He was still working at the time. And I just continued to drink all day. And I was a morning drinker, afternoon drinker, and evening drinker. And my husband would come home from work and I would be passed out. And then I started having blackouts, and we would go to dinner. We were out of town. We'd go to dinner. I couldn't remember where we ate, what I ate, what we talked about, how I even got back to the hotel. So I was seeing a pattern, but it didn't matter to me. At that time, I had a doctor tell me I needed to stop drinking. I needed to not drink anything. I told her that my son was getting married. Can I have champagne at the wedding? No, she said, no, don't. Try not, don't. Well, forget that. I got pretty hammered at his wedding, and I spoke at the rehearsal dinner, and I embarrassed myself, just repeated things and cried and just made what I thought was a fool of myself. Wish I had a redo on that. So this continued and continued, and I had falls. I fell walking the dogs with my husband, thank goodness, but I had a glass of wine in my hand. We were walking in the neighborhood. I fell on my face. I broke my teeth. So there were lots of, I had those kinds of consequences. I never got a DUI, and it's just by the grace of God that none of that happened, that I didn't get a DUI, that I didn't go to jail, that I didn't hurt anyone, that I didn't kill myself with my falls. So the night that I decided that I needed to go to Maggie's, because I had known Sandra, obviously, through the wedding of my son and her daughter, I knew Sandra had gone to Maggie's, and I saw the transformation that she had and how she kicked it, how she, because I drank with her, and I knew that for her to go from one end of the spectrum to the other, well, you know, Sandra did it, I can do it. And I was ready to do it. That's the, when I went to Mag, so I called Sandra the night before I went to Maggie's, and I told her, I cried. And I said, I was ready to be dropped off. So I went to Maggie's, and my husband dropped me off the next morning at 9 o'clock. And obviously we all know what Maggie's can do for us and what God can do for us. God can, it's what God did that really put me in the right place. There I was, gave me the book, got me a sponsor, and showed me the way. And I'll be forever grateful for that. I never knew about the allergy when I went into Maggie's. That's what I learned there, that I had an allergy to alcohol. And I thought, my doctor was right when she said that she used that word. She said, you have an allergy to alcohol. She said, she wanted me to go back and look at my heredity, my ancestry, where my parents were, their relatives were from. And I never did that, but yeah, there was definitely a reason for the way I was drinking. Lo and behold, I discovered my spirituality, and I worked the steps, and I became more spiritual, and I become more spiritual every day. And it just happened, you know, the experience, it's not one particular thing that happened to me. It was a joint effort of lots of things coming together that I experienced God, and I experienced joy, and I experienced the relief that sobriety gave me when I got out of the house, that no, I didn't think about drinking any longer. I didn't plan on where I was going to buy my wine and where I was going to stash it. And it just sort of evolved over time. And I'm a little over 2 years, and it has just been the most magnificent, marvelous thing that I have ever accomplished in my life, other than having children. And it's astounding to me how it all happened. And it really is a miracle that I'm not drinking and I'm not falling on my face, and, you know, so. Yeah,
it sounds like it. I haven't heard your background before, and so I'm grateful that I've been able to hear it. And what a miracle that you are sober, you know, and happy. And it's just wonderful. And I have a question though, because you and Sandra drink, and Sandra, I'm going to get to you in just a minute. But so you and Sandra drank together. Mm-hmm. Was Sandra the one who was like, you know, if I get like, I'm not that bad because Sandra drinks like me. Like, were you guys like drinking buddies, or did you co-sign each other?
Drinking buddies. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like seeing her was kind of like your evidence that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And mind you, when I was with Sandra, when we were drinking, I never thought, gosh, she's really getting drunk and she's just drinking like a fish. And my goodness gracious, I never judged. I drank just as much as she did. I mean, I didn't count. You know, my daughter used to count my glasses. That was another thing that happened at my house. But I never judged Sandra. I just knew we had a lot more in common than we thought when we first met. That, you know, we had this in common, and who knew?
Yeah. And now you have recovery in common,
Now we have recovery in common. Yeah.
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 Common problem.
Hallelujah on that.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Yeah. Well, Sandra, do you mind giving us a little bit of a background about what your alcoholism looked like and like what led you to the Magdalen House?
Sure, Stephanie, thank you. And JoJo and I had an instant love for each other from day one. We had an instant love for alcohol. We couldn't wait to be together. Anyway, my name is Sandra. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. My day of grace is March 23rd, 2019. And what I mean by grace is what God did for me that I couldn't do for myself. I too, was a 50s, born in the 50s. Everyone in my family drank. I believe my dad was an alcoholic. Two of my siblings, I believe, were alcoholics. A grandfather, an uncle, I wish now I knew back then what I know now. Anyway, I was raised in Jackson, Mississippi. I had a mom, dad, and two brothers and a sister. But from the get-go, and I told my story last week on last Sunday, and before I told the story, God revealed to me what a freaking strong-willed person I was. Strong-willed, self-seeking, and I needed to be recognized. I needed recognition for whatever reason. And I was strong-willed. I remember, and this brought up a memory too, that's so funny. In my church, we had to go through confirmation, to take communion. And they served wine at communion. And I remember, oh boy, I can't wait for that day when I'm confirmed and I can drink that wine. And let me tell you, I drank that Moog & David and it tasted good. I really liked it. But, I drank in high school on weekends. We'd sneak it and drink it. In college, I drank more. I ended up leaving college after 2 years. I drank. There were a few outside issues, too. And I moved to Dallas because someone told me I should model. And I went, yeah, that's what I really, whoa. So forget school. I'm going to go to Dallas. I had a friend out here who was my college roommate. So I said, I'll go live with her and start modeling. And I did. The three things that were important to me, I wanted some diamond earrings, a Mercedes Benz, and a fur coat. But going back just a second, when I was in high school, I got into acting, school plays, and I got the Best Actress Award. And I was in a musical called Pajama Game, and I did a dance. I had no background in dancing, but because I got Best Actress, I thought, man, I am something special. So I had received graduation money. This tells you how strong-willed and how self-seeking I was. I had gotten graduation money from my relatives up in Washington State. And I told my mother that my dad was kind of out of the picture. He was the alcoholic. And unfortunately, at age 61, he took his own life. But I told my mom, hey, I'm going to Vegas. I'm going to be a showgirl. And my brother lived out there. He was interning in veterinary medicine. They said, yeah, let her come out. He was married. Yeah, let Sandra come out. And I had my sister-in-law take me to the Desert Inn so I could be a showgirl. And, I just knew I was just, and no formal training in dancing. But we got to the Desert Inn. And they said, I'm sorry, you have to be 21. And I was 18. So that was a blow to the ego. And ego is not my amigo. And I have plenty of it. And I am plenty selfish. I modeled in Dallas. It was a great career. I had great friends. It was a very self type of, you know, I was on runways. I was in front of the camera. I was being recognized. And dated some pretty awful characters, drank a lot, even did outside issues that could have really killed me. I was in situations where I thank God every day that I'm alive. One being, I think I was in the midst of a drug cartel in Mexico one time. Anyway, I met this great guy, my husband, Michael. And I thought, this guy is so refreshing. You know, he's like someone I grew up with. He was secure. He loved me. I knew he would never cheat on me, you know, and I fell in love. And I got pregnant before we got married. We were talking about marriage, but that was probably the best thing that could have happened to me, was having my first child. And we got married before we had Sloan, but and after Sloan, we had two others. And, you know, the crazy thing is, Stephanie and JoJo, that when we got married, I never drank at home. You know, we didn't drink. We didn't have cocktail hour. We didn't drink. We would drink on the weekends with friends. And I usually drank a little more than the others, but I was not drinking alcoholically. I could put it down. I wasn't thinking about it, you know. But this is what's so crazy, and it's very similar to JoJo. I was just really involved with my family, cooking dinner every night, involved in their activities all the time. But when they started leaving home, and this is so similar between JoJo and I guess I felt like, hey, it's party time. I can do whatever I want, you know. Hey, yeah, I'll have some wine with lunch. And I, like JoJo, saw my alcohol, my drinking progressing. You know, the phrase, well, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, you know. It got to where I was drinking maybe wine a couple of times a week, to where I was drinking it at 5 o'clock every night. And then it started ooching up to 4 o'clock. Then it started ooching up to 2 or 3 glasses of wine at lunch with friends. And my family started noticing it. My oldest daughter, Sloan, said, Mom, you're just not the person you used to be. And of course, it made me mad. It made me angry. Don't you say I have a drinking problem? I mean, I took a dish off the kitchen wall and threw it across the kitchen. No way am I going to be an alcoholic. No way. You know, I've seen it. No way is Sandra going to be an alcoholic. I would sit outside and drink, and it got to where I was drinking. I go buy a pack of cigarettes and just smoke them down in my toenails and sit out there and drink. And I would go, I started feeling empty, and I was getting drunk to where I would have to crawl to the back door, to where I slipped on a brick and slit my chin open. And like JoJo, I was, do I have enough for the day? Oh gosh, am I too drunk to run to the store and get more? Oh, where did I hide my glass? Oh, Michael's going to be home soon. Oh, and I had a little cubby hole in the kitchen. I would even drink a bottle of wine, and so Michael wouldn't notice. I had another stash and funnel it into the bottle, into the refrigerator. So, you know, we're so sneaky. We're so sneaky. The good thing that happened was the kids got help. The kids and my husband went to Lisa Kroenke, because Lacey is my daughter Sloan's best friend. And Lisa told him, hey, you need to go to AA meetings in Al-Anon. And, you know, and I was wondering why they weren't going, Mom, you know, on me. making me mad. They kind of laid off of me. And there were more consequences, one of which I ended up in the emergency room in Austin, Texas. Don't even remember how I got there. Don't remember the ambulance taking me there. And just like JoJo said, by God's grace, I've never hurt anyone. I never got a DWI, a DUI. I've never been in jail, but I was separated. I was so separated from my family, from God, who, and I loved God. I was separated from my friends. I was empty. I was a big black hole. It was like my soul was gone. I just, what I like to say when I talk to my sponsees is that they're the three M's to alcohol. First, it was magical. The number one M, it was magical. We loved the ease and comfort that it gave us. Then it becomes medicinal, where you kind of need it. It's our medicine. You know, that's the second M. And the third M is it became my master. As Bill said, it was like quicksand was around me on page 8, and it became my master, and it was misery, just misery. So the kids came to me after this episode in Austin. They said, hey, mom, can we come over for lunch? And I went, oh, this is kind of weird. So, you know, so they said, mom, there's a bed at the Magdalene House. Will you please go? I don't need the Magdalene House. I don't need to go to the Magdalene House right now. And things, you know, they went on their merry way. And then a few months after that, oh, I have to just read this one thing. I found this the other day. This is a little devotion book I read every morning. This is from March 18th, 2007. I wrote in my little book. So this was 2007. I said, Lord, thank you for this gift. Lord, I want to do what is right. I am sick of how I've been living. Please fill me with your power and spirit. I love you, Sandra. March 18th, 2007. So, you know, at that time, I knew something was amiss. I was feeling separated. So anyway, I took Ambien too. That was part of my trick. You know, when I started drinking in the morning, I would drink. I would get woozy. I'd take in half an Ambien. I'd sleep a couple hours. I'd get up so I could be the actress and prepare a dinner for my husband and be the good little wife, and also to drink more wine and then take another Ambien to go to sleep, to get up in the morning, maybe go play a little tennis, and then drink my wine, take the half an Ambien. Now, that's a sick person. So one Friday, I woke up from my little Ambien nap after I had gone and played a little tennis, drank I don't know how much wine, and a voice said, Sandra, you are sick. You need help. I said to myself, this is not normal, Sandra. You need help. You are an alcoholic. And people were coming over that night for dinner. I called Maggie's after my Ambien nap. And Lee said, well, come on, we have a bed. And they did have one bed. And this was at the old house. And I said, well, I can't come tonight. I'm having a dinner party. And I'll see you in the morning. And what was so great was I got up. I was scared. And I said, Michael, you've got to take me. And it was 2 miles from my house. And when I walked in those doors, these women hugged me and loved me. and took me in. And I said, am I going to take a shower in this shower? And, you know, but because I'm so special, but I have never felt a love from other women as I did in that house. And this is the crazy thing. I'll say this one thing and I'll shut up. I had gone to a few meetings and I went to a foundation meeting. This was before I went to Maggie's. And the foundation meeting, I said, yes, this is me. Tears, I said, oh God, thank you. Thank you. This is me. This is me. And I got my desire chip. And the woman who gave me the desire chip was this beautiful blonde with these sparkly blue eyes. And when she handed me the chip, she said, Sloan looks just like you. My oldest daughter looks just like you. And I was going, how does this chick know who Sloan is? You know? But I went a couple more times. A lady called to sponsor me. In the meantime, my mind told me, no, you're not an alcoholic. You're not an alcoholic. You can control it. Well, I couldn't, you know. So when I got to Maggie's, I got there on a Saturday. Sunday morning was the speaker meeting at 11 o'clock. And this girl in the house said, the big honcho's going to be speaking this morning. And I went, cool, you know. And so I think it was Gail who was introducing her. And I saw this woman sitting in a chair, and she was a blonde-headed woman. And then she got up to speak. And I said, that woman looks familiar. And as she kept speaking, I realized she mentioned Lacey. Then I put two and two together. This is the lady who gave me my desire chip. And it was Lisa Kroenke. And I still shiver when I think of that moment, because at that moment, I knew that I was where I needed to be. And I went up to her after the meeting and I went, I can't believe this. And she said, I've been waiting for you for 2 years. So I just dug my heels in. I wanted it. I was desperate. I saw these women. I went, they were alcoholics? I want to be like them. So, you know, and God just, I will have to say, I really had a spiritual awakening immediately. I mean, one was seeing Lisa Kroenke. One was walking in that door. And then through working those steps, I just see God incidences. Every day, they're not coincidences. They are God incidences. Once I finally said, I love you, God, but now I surrender to you. I depend on you. I am exhausted. I don't want to run the show no more. I need a director. And I let him take me. That's all. I'm sorry. I get kind of emotional.
No, I love it. So both of you are just such, and I'm so glad I got to hear some of your background, Sandra. Like, I mean, just even learning you were part of the drug cartel, I can't even imagine, you know, it's like we come in and all that I see, right, is the recovered versions. And so,
well, I wasn't part of the drug cartel, but I was with a guy in Mexico, and I'm pretty sure we went off in his truck to a very remote desert-like place, and there were 15 trucks there, all men. And how I wasn't raped or killed, I don't know. But, you know, looking back on it, I was going to some pretty dark places.
Mm-hmm. I mean, same. It's just coming in and, like, only seeing, like, the recovered, you know, bright, happy, joyous, and free versions of each other. It's hard to imagine what you guys were like before, you know? And so it's always good for me, I think, to hear other people's backgrounds and stories and, you know.
Are you an alcoholic woman in recovery seeking connection? Maggie's Women's Group is a fellowship group for women in recovery to build friendships and connect with the community at the Magdalen House. Maggie's Women's Group is open to any alcoholic woman in recovery, not just Maggie's alumna. To find out how to get involved and connect with us on Facebook, please visit magdalenhouse.org/maggies-womens-group.
So you got out of Maggie's before JoJo,
and JoJo failed to mention what really spurred JoJo was a Facebook. Tell them about that from Meredith.
Yes, I know. I skipped over quite a bit of my story. Nerves, I believe. But anyway, yes, before I went to Maggie's and before I called Sandra, I guess it was a couple of weeks before that, I read on Facebook, Cece, my daughter-in-law and Sandra's daughter, who's married to my son, she has a very good friend, a childhood friend that she knows. Her name is Meredith, and she lives in Austin. And she posted something on Facebook about her recovery. And I think she was celebrating a year, maybe, or a year. Was it her 1 year sobriety?
I think 1 year, yeah.
It was so moving what she wrote, and it spoke to me because what she was saying on her post was just what I wanted and what I felt and she talked about her struggles and her alcoholism, and it just really spoke to me. And
I think it was the day before you called Maggie's. I think you read that post the day before.
Okay. Yeah, my memory is foggy.
Well, mine too.
For many reasons, age being number one. But anyway, yeah, it just moved me so much. And it was there were many things that were instrumental in my going to Maggie's. And Meredith was one part of it. Sandra was a part of it. My family was a part of it. And I have to believe that God put me in the car and had my husband drive me and drop me off.
Yeah. Divine orchestration.
You bet. Because I couldn't do it myself. There were many times at night over the years that I would wake up in the middle of the night because I slept terrible because I drank all the time. And I would wake up and I would say to myself, I'm not going to drink anymore. I'm not going to do this again tomorrow. I'm not going to do it. It's going to be a new day. I'm going to get out of bed. I'm not going to drink. And it never happened. It never happened. So yes, God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Mm-hmm. I had tried. I mean, I think I went maybe a day without drinking. That was all I could do. I couldn't do it myself.
Yeah.
That her post was definitely instrumental in pushing me to go to Maggie's, to get help.
That's wonderful. We don't know exactly who we're going to help or who we're going to speak to when we share our recovery. Like, you don't know when we release this, who's going to hear this, and that's going to be their push, their motivation to get recovery.
That's the beauty of this. That's just the beauty of this. You reach out, but you don't even know you're reaching out to somebody, that you're hitting somebody's nerve, that somebody's hearing your story, that
yeah. It's a little seed sown.
The seed, yeah. Yes, that little seed. I've just felt victimized my whole life, and that I was just poor, pitiful me, that I lost my parents and my brother within the span of 5 years. For alcoholic reasons, they all died of complications of alcoholism. That was really when I started drinking heavily. 2006 to 2011 were the deaths of my immediate family, and that was when I really started hitting it pretty hard. That's not an excuse. There were obviously.
Well, we didn't know.
I learned that all these, by doing the steps, I learned that, man, I had to clean it up. I had to clean my house and get rid of all these feelings and make amends and just, yeah, there was so much stuff in my life that needed fixing.
We had to have a spiritual colonoscopy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So Sandra, when you left Maggie's, how did you feel? Were you scared? What did you do? As soon as you left?
As soon as I left, I had not shaved my legs and my fingernails looked terrible. So my girls took me to get a manicure. And I wanted to stay at home. I wanted to stay very close to home and Maggie's. The minute I left, I was back at Maggie's just about every day, to meetings, volunteering. I wanted to stay close. I made my own sticks. I started my morning just like we did at Maggie's. You know, I said the On Awakening. I shook my can. I pulled my stick. I wrote things I was grateful for. I wrote things, you know, my word for the day and how I could use it during the day. I just repeated what I had learned at Maggie's. I stayed very close to Maggie's. I greeted when I worked the desk, you know, when new clients would come in, I'd just hug them. And, you know, I am so grateful. You know, it is a joy. It is an inexpressible joy. That's what I did. I mean, my husband hid all the stuff here, but, it came back out in 2 weeks. It didn't bother me. I had a psychic change. About 6 weeks after I was out of Maggie's, after playing tennis, I went to our old haunt to go have breakfast. And I sat right up at the bar to order my jalapeno biscuits. And it didn't, looking at those bottles, the obsession was removed by working these steps, you know, and I worked diligently with my sponsor. I wanted it done. I wanted to be new. I wanted to be reborn. I wanted new life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did.
So when, what did you do, Sandra? Because I know right now, you're the the fellowship chair, correct?
Oh, and that's another thing. You know, they said, get involved with the Maggie's Women's Group. I immediately got involved with that. And I immediately started helping with the anniversary party, the retreat. Nancy asked me to help be on decorations for our first retreat. And I mean, I got involved. And now JoJo and I are fellowship this year together for Maggie's Women's Group. And I urge all of y'all to get involved, and we need you. And it's a group that I know I don't have to dress up for. I know I don't have to put on my makeup. They love me. We all love each other. We hug each other. We love each other. Get involved. You know, it keeps us out of ourselves too. And you're helping other women. I used to crave alcohol, and now I crave to share what God did for me that I couldn't do for myself. You know, that grace. I crave to do that, whether it's doing MWG or sponsoring. You know, if God calls, I go yes. Because it says in the book, our job description is to stay close to God and do what he wants us to do. So there are days when, you know, I feel kind of lazy or I get into self, but I just do my 10, 11, and 12 and clean that. Do my spiritual colonoscopy. But stay close to your sisters.
What is Maggie's Women's Group for the listeners? How would you explain what that group is? What's its purpose?
Well, I would explain it as a group of women who've had a spiritual awakening who want to give back to the Magdalene House and help the girls who are newly recovered, the girls in the house. You know, we provide meals at Thanksgiving, Christmas, Valentine's parties, Easter's. We plan the retreat, which this year was so awesome to me. I mean, out in that wide open space, and the first year too, I mean, it, and pulling us together, it pulls us together. It keeps us in fellowship with one another. You know, some people might think of it kind of as a sorority, but it's not like that at all. It is sisters, loving sisters, who want the best for their sisters and the best for Maggie's. You know, that's how I would describe it.
I'm so glad that you brought up the sisterhood and Valentine's Day, actually, because when I was originally planning for this, for the year, for like podcasts and stuff, I wanted to do something like I wanted an episode to be released and highlighted for like Galentine's Day, and like the theme being sisterhood. And that's originally why I thought of the two of you talking about Maggie's Women's Group, because I thought that how great would this be to highlight sisterhood in honor of Galentine's Day. So that's whenever this will be released in February for that.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, we're the Golden Girls, aren't we, JoJo?
We are. we're the Golden Girls for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I mean, so JoJo and I, during this, you know, so the other night we were on the phone, we prayed together. We, you know, it's just, JoJo is a light in my life. I'll tell you what.
How awesome is that though? Like, especially for your kids, right? That like the two of you get along so well. Like, that's just amazing, right?
It is. It is.
It truly is. Yeah. It's a gift.
JoJo, what about you? What did you do whenever you left Maggie's, and how quickly did you get involved, and what did you do to get involved?
So I got out of the house right before Christmas, December 19th of 2019. And this is a little funny aside, but when we purchased our house here, we used to live in Preston Hollow, and we bought a house over here by the lake. And unbeknownst to me at the time that we bought it, I'm a mile away from Old Maggie's. I'm a mile away from Redwood, probably not even a mile. I live by Casa Linda. But when we bought the house, the people that owned it had us, we didn't have to sign a contract, but they asked us if we would carry on a tradition that they did, their family, they had two boys. They took Christmas breakfast to the fire station up on Garland, that old fire station up there. It's firehouse number 31. And so they asked us to continue the tradition. And we said, you know, of course, we'll do that. So when I got out of the house on the 19th, I came home. My husband picked me up. I just came home. And I don't remember exactly what I did those first couple of days. I just kind of regrouped, I think, and, you know, took a shower and, you know, didn't think about drinking.
What? You didn't take a shower the whole time you were
at? Well, I just, yeah, I did, but it wasn't the same. That shower over there, it's not like you took a shower. No, it's not like you took a shower. Yeah. Mm-mm. So I took a really nice shower when I got home. And so I got my menus together, and I decided what I was going to make for the fire station for Christmas morning. So I did that. And then, of course, Christmas came, and family, and, you know, we always went to Sandra's house for Christmas dinner. And then I went to the Marshall side of the family for Christmas Eve. Anyway, I did that. I did not even worry about what I was going to do around alcohol, because I knew I would be around it during the holidays. And it didn't really even cross my mind that I was nervous about it, or what am I going to do, or am I not going to go because there's going to be alcohol? Am I just going to stay home? And No, I went and it didn't bother me. And so, but then I stayed in close contact with Maggie's. I volunteered. I immediately went to the meetings at the house and joined Maggie's women's group and stayed in contact with people and with the house and everyone.
Jojo, you know, the word that came to my mind when, you know, we had Christmas and Christmas Eve and we just enjoyed everybody's company for the first time so much is peace. We had peace. We had freedom. Yeah. We had freedom for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Being recovered is such a calming experience compared to the chaos that my life was. Mm-hmm. I was drinking. It was chaos. Mm-hmm. There was, you know, nothing going on. My mind was chaos. Everything about my person was just chaotic because of my drinking.
Yeah.
And being recovered and being around recovered people, it's such a blessing and it's just so peaceful. Yeah, it's peaceful. And mm-hmm. it's wonderful to be that because, you know, and when I speak of my recovery, I talk about it as being, I've been repurposed.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we moved into this house, there was a deck on the back of it that we took apart. It was very treacherous, the steps down, and the wood was very nice. It was this Brazilian wood, and we made a screened porch out of that wood. We repurposed the wood. Well, I always feel now that I have been repurposed, that God has repurposed me, and my purpose now is to help other alcoholic women, to give back to Maggie's, and to show how recovery can be miraculous,
mm-hmm.
and joyful and
beautiful,
astounding. Yeah. And beautiful. Yeah. Cause it is.
Mm-hmm. How did you originally get involved with Maggie's women's group?
Let's see. Okay. So 2019, then 2020 happened. COVID.
Oh yeah. Right.
COVID.
After.
COVID. Yeah. Immediately in March.
Mm-hmm.
Started remodeling some rooms in our house at the time. So we were doing that. So then Maggie's women's group, I don't know who came up with it, Sandra, but we had something called Happy Hour, whether it was Chloe.
Chloe came up with that.
Chloe came up with that. So
we're starting it back tonight as well.
And we're starting it back tonight because we can't come to the house. So tonight will be the return of the resurrected Happy Hour from 5 to 6 for the Maggie's women's group.
Well, or anybody.
Anybody. So I did that in March, and that was fun. That was a lot of fun. You got to know people. I mean, sometimes there would be just a handful of people on the Zoom, but then other times there would be quite a few women, and you just got to know each other. Sometimes we'd play games. Sometimes we would just chat. We would laugh. We would cry. Sometimes some girls had a situation that was sad and we would cry with them, and it was just camaraderie and fellowship with each other, and it was really wonderful, and I think we all enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So. I remember it was a big hit for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then COVID, you know, people started getting out more and mm-hmm. you know, but we're going to have a Happy Hour resurgence in tonight and see how it goes.
Is there going to be a game?
No, tonight we're bringing
a picture of our mentor, someone who was a mentor. Somebody who inspired us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And why they inspired us, you know, or a mentor. Yeah.
Awesome. So. And then there's a book club, right?
Yes.
Tell me about the book club.
Mm-hmm. We have read, I think, 5 or 6 books.
No way.
Right now, we're reading Matthew McConaughey's book called Green Lights.
I heard it's good.
I just started reading it last night, but it's good.
I know. I have it. I have listened to, I have the audio and the hardback. So I started it by listening to the audio, and it is good. It is good. So we're meeting the end of the month on January 30th at Lisa's house. And we're also going to do a Zoom. She's going to set up a Zoom so that if people don't feel comfortable coming to her house, that they could join on the Zoom.
How wonderful.
We have a discussion of each of the books, and we talk about it. We throw out questions, and it's fun. It's informative.
And we're going to have walks at the Arboretum. Someone suggested a bowling night. I'm going to set that up probably for next month. It's been kind of tricky with COVID. You know, we get going and things are looking good, and then, you know, we're kind of isolated again, or people don't feel comfortable getting out. And yeah. So we're depending on the director to guide us, you know. So, but just getting together with women, the fellowship, you know, and having new people come and getting them involved. And, you know, Maggie's Women's Group is a big part of our lives.
Mm-hmm. And you know, what I think is so wonderful is that you have built this strong sisterhood with not just each other, because the two of you came in knowing each other, but with women throughout the community, like even during times of COVID, right? And, you know, like normal drinkers, they don't get such a big opportunity like that as we do in recovery, you know, and like, we don't have to be so isolated because, you know, we have so many women we can rely on, and even during COVID times.
And I'm thankful for Zoom. I am so thankful for Zoom. You know, it's not as great as being in person, but you do develop relationships. With our happy hour, when we finally could meet each other, it was just incredible, you know?
Oh, yeah, because I bet it was like the first time you'd ever seen them in person, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yes.
Wow.
Crazy. Crazy.
Kisses and yeah.
Wonderful. Wow. So I do want to ask before like we wrap up and everything, what is it that the two of you do together? You put on these fellowship events? Is that what?
JoJo and I are chairs this year for fellowship, bringing women together.
And then other people, like other women, if they want to help, they can help with that too.
Right? Oh, absolutely. We'd love their help and their ideas. Absolutely. Call me if you have any ideas. You know, we'd love to go get a lake house. It's just kind of a funky time right now. You know, we're up for any ideas, and we'd love for you to help and be, if we keep happy hour going, to be hostesses for happy hour. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So since, you know, I originally had planned this for like the theme to be sisterhood, and I think sisterhood has been, you know, woven in throughout this entire podcast, but I do want to ask, you know, each of you, like, what does sisterhood look like in your life today?
A big happy family.
Mm-hmm.
A big happy group of women who share the disease, but who also share the joy that recovery brings, and that life is fun. You know, when I was drinking and when I first went into Maggie's, I thought, I'm just not going to have fun anymore.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm probably not going to have fun anymore. I'm not going to be fun. You know, I was kind of the life of the party when I'd go out to places with my husband or whatever. And I thought, that's going to all stop. But it didn't. It didn't. And that is what the sisterhood and the fellowship, like the retreat. I had so much fun at the retreat. I mean, we all worked so hard, but it was so much fun.
It was so much fun. It brought us closer in the girls.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I met new girls there.
Right. To learn about other people and their, you know, personal things about them. It's just, it draws you closer. You become closer with people.
I can't wait till next year.
I heard the expression in my sisterhood with my sisters. There are no pretenses. We are real and we are honest with each other. And it is like a color I've never seen before. It's like a color I have never seen before. It's real. You know, you can just be you and you're loved.
And what a gift.
What a gift. Yeah. And only we alcoholics can understand that. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, this has been wonderful. I hope you ladies had so much fun. My final question, and it's just the same question that I ask everybody, is what would you say to the suffering alcohol? Well, I guess it's a little different than what I normally ask, but this is what I'm going to ask is, you know, if there's a woman who's listening and she's, you know, still suffering, what would you want to say to her?
I'd say abandon yourself to God as you understand God, to surrender, to let someone else direct you, to let a higher power who has the power, since we are powerless, surrender, let go. You can't run a race looking backwards. You know, get rid of all that stuff and come join us, because it's something I have never tasted. Mm. Yeah.
Sounds wonderful.
It's better than a chocolate turtle cake.
And JoJo, what about you? What would you want to say?
The same. And also, you know, you're not alone. Look at all of us. I mean, that was also what was so surprising. What I felt when I first went into Maggie's was the love and the hugs and the just the camaraderie and the fact that I'm not alone. There's so many of us, and they all are here for the same reason. It can happen. It can happen if you just have to follow your director and get out of yourself and stay out of yourself, because, you know, self will run riot, and we all know what that does. And it's a wonderful life. It's a wonderful, beautiful life.
Yes. All right. Well, this has been wonderful for all of our listeners. If any woman can get involved with Maggie's Women's Group, you do not have to go through any of the programs. And if you would like to get involved, please check out our website at magdalenhouse.org. We would love to have you. Sandra, JoJo, thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephanie.
You're the bomb, as JoJo's husband says. You're the bomb. And you can check out us at Maggie's Women's Group on Facebook page.
Yes.
Please join us, and you get all the scoop on the Maggie's Women's Facebook. It's Maggie's Women's Group
right
on Facebook. It's a private page. It's a private group.
Yeah, all right. So, and there'll be questions that you have to answer, and then somebody can approve you. So thank you for bringing that up, Sandra. That's probably the best way to get the scoop. So, all right. Thank you, ladies. I will see you later.
Bye. Thank you, Stephanie. I love you. And I love you, Sandra.
I love you both. I'll see you soon.
We hope you've enjoyed this From the Vault re-release of the Magdalen House podcast. Tune in every first and third Wednesday for a new release from one of our three podcast series. To learn more about the Magdalen House and the services we offer, visit magdalenhouse.org or follow us on your favorite social media channels by searching for The Magdalen House.